Hello, and welcome to You Should See the Other Guy, the podcast where we watch a romantic movie and tell you why whoever picked a love interest chose poorly. Or sometimes we just watch a classic rom-com so that Sadie and I can talk about how delightful it is and Samantha can complain about the narrative arc or lack thereof. I'm Jennifer.
I am Samantha.
And I'm your Aunt Sadie. What? You hungry? We're talking about my big fat Greek wedding. 2000 deuce. I'm so excited.
What a time capsule this was. I saw this in theaters, I believe, in 2002.
Oh,
when Sadie was just a little baby. I must have been like in my... I must have been in my tween era.
Yeah, when did this come out? Let's see. I would have been 15 or 16, depending.
But I remember it being a box office sensation. No one could shut up about my big fat Greek wedding.
Yeah, that's why you had to go see it in theaters to find out what all the buzz was about. I mean, you couldn't stream it. There wasn't even the Netflix mailing service then. I mean, we could go to Blockbuster back in those days, but then you would have to wait like until like a year later when the movie came out on DVD and you could even get it from there.
Yeah.
And this movie only had a budget of $5 million. I miss the days when movies were just $5 million.
Better days in
many
ways.
Where do you think all the budget went? Do you think it went to Aiden? Do you think it went to the catering budget?
I think it went to their shockingly accurate like 1993 wardrobe.
Wait, was it supposed to be set in 1993?
It was so Justin watched this with me and he was confounded by this because I was like, well, it came out in 2002. Like when she goes back to the like community college or whatever to their computer lab there, he was all like, no way, these are not 2002 computers. And I was like, well, maybe they got them in like 1998. Anyway, he was like looking it up. And I think that we ended up deciding that it was about events that happened in like 1993 based on styling.
It was, initially Nia Ferdalos, who wrote this movie and also starred in it, this was initially a one woman play that she created back in like 1996.
Oh, all
1997.
Perhaps we should have updated the occupation. I mean, I'm glad that, spoiler alert, her dad bought them a house because her job as a travel agent in 2002 is about to get a whole lot worse.
Let's see. Should I go ahead and summarize this movie? I mean, if you don't understand the concept of this movie, it's really just about her big fat Greek wedding. So there's not much to say. But anyway, Nia Vardalos stars as Tula, and she is I think that she's like the youngest, she's somewhere in there, to a very large, very loud Greek family. So her family owns like a bunch of businesses, basically like a travel agency, a laundry cleaning business, and then her dad owns the restaurant Dancing Zorba's. And so she has just all, you know, her dad is very gung-ho about being Greek. And so growing up, she always felt very different from her other much more like white, British, Anglo-Saxon, I don't know what the right word is, Protestant, WASP counterpart. She grows up in Chicago. And now that she's at the dusty age of 30,
not flirty and thriving.
Yeah. Not 30, not flirty. What was I saying? So her sister Athena has basically fulfilled the number one goal of Greek women, which is to get married to a Greek man and have Greek babies and make Greek food. So that's like the goal, according to her dad. So like her dad will just be like, you're getting so old, Tula, like you have to get married. So he wants her to fulfill her goal in life, which is to marry Greek men, have Greek babies, make Greek food. So she works as a waitress at the restaurant. She just feels bad about herself. Like, she does not dress the way that she really wants to. She is very timid, meek, doesn't really like the way that she looks, is not fulfilled with her life. One day, a very hot guy comes in. His name is Ian, played by John Corbett, and she is... She kind of makes a fool out of herself. She's very, just like stares at him way too long, makes him feel uncomfortable. He like shows up to have a work meeting, but also he's kind of like interested in her. Like, he's kind of intrigued by her. And so he leaves, and in her head, this kind of jump starts. Like, I think I want to get and like start like seizing life by the horns, right? So she enrolls in a computing class, a computer class.
Because I love all the dialogue about understanding computers. She knows about computers. Like,
it's so funny how she's talking to her dad, trying to convince her to allow him to go to college. And she's like, Dad, remember, like, I got really high grades in computers.
Yes!
That's such a funny sentence. That's very funny. But anyway, she ends up going to college, you know, on the side. And it's very interesting the way that they portray. And I'll talk about this a little bit coming from a Polish household, right? Of like this concept of the man is the head, but the woman is the neck. And so the head goes where the neck says, kind of thing that I don't believe, but also that is just the way that some cultures and familial systems work. And so it's very, you know, as someone who, like, my grandma was very much that way, and like most of my extended family, and like that's kind of how women in my family talked, it is very comforting. And like, it's very, but it's funny. Shouldn't be the way that it is. But anyway, it's very interesting how they basically play the men in their lives for fools, right? Because Tula's mom, Maria, is very much like, she supports Tula. And she's like, we can do whatever you want. We just have to manipulate it so that it seems like it's your dad's idea. And they do. Like, they're like, oh my God, like, it would be such a, like, benefit to the business if we had someone who was good at computers and all this stuff. And Aunt Vula, who owns the travel agency, is on board with this. Like, it's just interesting the way that the wives like manipulate their husbands and make the husbands think that they're so much smarter, but in actuality, 100% not the case. But anyway, Tula goes off to college and she starts to explore kind of coming into her own. Like, she dresses in a way that she really wants to. She puts on contact lenses. She starts to play around with makeup. And then she later on starts working at the travel agency because she has a lot of really fun, interesting ideas that she wants to bring to Aunt Vula's business. So she's working at the travel agency. And she keeps seeing Ian, John Corbett, who is just enamored with her through the window of the travel agency. I'm like, I wish someone would ever be as enamored with me as he is with her after just like passingly seeing her in a travel agency. And so
that
one day
was
he
so
goes
weird
in,
thinking that like it was like charming, like he's like flirting with her through the window, you know, of the travel agency. And I was just thinking about, wow, what different times than like the state of what whatever is happening with dating now, that this guy saw somebody he liked and like, I don't know, you know, it's
went for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, like he goes in and then it's like, he very much just like fall, like they just kind of fall into each other. Like they're like chatting and then he's like, you want to go to dinner? And she's like, yeah, absolutely. And so what ensues is kind of a culture clash. Because she is very reluctant to date him because she knows how difficult it would be for her family, because no one in her family has ever dated or married someone who was not also Greek. But he is very much like, I kind of came alive when I met you. I will do anything I can to like make your parents like me. So they start dating and they start dating kind of in secret. Like he would take her places and then drop her off and they would make out in the car, kind of like teenagers, even though they're like fully professional adults. And then they get caught. The dad is like, I'm going to die. How could you do this to me? This is the ultimate betrayal. very much a dad thing to do and say. And he's like, you've stabbed me in the heart. And then, yeah, essentially it's just the little like trials and tribulations of dating in this kind of like culture clash way. And eventually Ian asks her to marry him. She says yes. And then, of course, the big fat Greek wedding enters the scene, the titular big fat Greek wedding. And he converts to Greek Orthodoxy. There's just a lot of, it's so good. It's so good. And then that's basically it, pretty much. Like, they kind of go through some rough patches.
That is basically it, isn't it?
Yeah.
They never break up and get back together.
Yes.
No circumstances ever tear them apart. We don't necessarily see our protagonists grow and learn and change in major ways. Anyway. Yes. Anyway.
Yes. They just get married. My summary, Samantha. It's still my summary.
There's
anyway.
Nothing to summarize. It's just vibes. This movie is glitter and vibes. Anyway.
They have a great wedding. And then at the end, the dad shows that he accepts Ian and he gifts them a house. And then at the end, we see that Ian and Tula live next door to her parents and they're taking their little daughter to Greek school. And then that's the end. That's the end. Okay, now you sharks feast. Tell me your thoughts.
This movie made so much sense to me as a Sadie movie because it is just vibes. As you write on, when you do lists of movies for them.us, you often include a category called slice of life, which apparently just means like, this is just a fun little, a fun little serving of culture for you. And that's what this feels like to me. It's kind of like, it almost could just be a documentary, except it has actors in it instead. And like the closing narration that's supposed to sum everything up is just like, well, that just happened, is basically the vibe of it. So yeah, sorry, I'm a little excited, but I named myself Narrative Conflict in the recording software because that's what this movie is missing. Some kind of like I was waiting for them to like reach some kind of like breaking point and break up. And so I checked how much of the movie was left and it was like 10 minutes. Like they're literally just going to get married and that'll be the end.
Yeah.
And then it's made clear that Ian is fully subsumed into the big fat Greek family and is one of them. And yeah, they amoebaed him successfully in, even though he was a different type of bacterium. No, I love this movie, actually.
finally, we're on the same page.
We're on the same
after
page
the
again.
Disaster that was Kajillionaire.
I'm sad I missed it because I would have been Team Sadie. I'm pro Kajillionaire.
I know you would have.
I can't even understand it. I thought that you must have been being sarcastic when you said it was delightful. Like,
oh, no,
we're on.
Great.
You all have lost your marbles.
It was so good. I thought was it was uplifting.
Was it Sadie uplifting? That said, like, she knows that I like a movie if it has an emotionally repressed protagonist, like, queer shit
yes.
and like extreme weirdness or something like that.
That movie delivered all of that in droves.
Sadie has my number for sure. Yeah.
Well, both literally and in this sense.
Yes.
See, I think it's funny that Samantha would describe My Big Fat Greek Wedding as a vibes movie because to me, this is more of a mundane movie. It's like, it's just about very real life stuff that would and did apparently happen in her life. And it's just punched up a little bit. Like the dialogue is quicker and people have comebacks and don't do vocal filler, you know, is sort of. I felt like Kajillionaire was more more of a vibes movie, and the vibes were eerie and bad.
Yeah.
The vibes were impeccable.
But it also had multiple forms of conflict, you know?
Bad.
It had.
But okay.
I don't dislike my Big Fat Greek Wedding.
You don't have to have a breakup in a romance to drive narrative conflict.
Oh, you're speaking Sadie's language now.
Yes, I am. Yes.
I think that this movie, well, first of all, it was like, it's a movie about the quieter, you know, I guess the smaller, the seemingly lower stakes, little conflicts between family members and personalities that happen when a marriage joins up. And it's kind of compounded and magnified a little bit in idiosyncratic ways because of Tula's particular family and their culture, you know, versus Ian's kind of repressed waspy parents and whatever. But there's no big, I don't think that it needed to drive them to a breaking point to be entertaining. But yeah, it is a little bit of like, this is a nice story. I will hand that to you, but like,
I feel like, Jen, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay.
I just, I did fade out, literally like my thoughts faded out and I couldn't think of what I wanted to say next. So.
Jen, I got you.
The floor is yours.
I think that if you like that kind of like breaking point, which I enjoy in a lot of other movies. Like I love that moment where like they have to have a reckoning and then they break apart and then they come back together again, like even stronger, right? I love that trope. But I love how this is very, like it is a romantic comedy and it is very like, you know, idealistic and not realistic in that way. However, it's also realistic in that this is kind of like you just, when you're in a marriage that has like differences, right? Whether that's religious or cultural or whatever, you just kind of compromise and move on. And like, that's just kind of it. Like, there's not a whole lot of like intensity with it. And so what I love about it, it reminds me of Moonstruck to me, because it's about this family that like, it's not so much a rom-com between just the two main characters, but it's like, he is also wooing the rest of her family. So it is kind of Crazy Rich Asians, kind of Moonstruck, all kind of wrapped into one. And it also, it doesn't shy away from in-jokes within like the Greek community, right? Like this is written by a Greek woman and other people can definitely enjoy it. But like the Windex, for example, that's not something that I really encounter, you know, like that's not something that my uncles and dads and, you know, everything have done. So, but like, I don't need it explained to me. Like, I don't need to be catered to. And I loved that about this movie. Like, yeah, of course he puts Windex on everything to heal himself. Of course they do like X, Y, and Z. So what I love about this movie, I think, is that I just don't know if a movie like this would be made today because we are so like, we prioritize conflict as the main plot driver now. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is just refreshing to see a movie like this that's just like, this is like a day in the life of people who are like this. And I'm Greek, so I'm going to write a story about being Greek and kind of how it's difficult to be Greek if you are a woman over the age of like 20. And
probably then too, to be fair.
Yeah. You know? So those are kind of the main points of why I enjoy this. It's just, it's so nice to just like turn on and just like chill with your on-screen friends for an hour and 30 minutes and then it's over.
Yeah. I think that also I'm in a good headspace for this because as we discussed last week, my view of Kajillionaire may have been a bit colored by the very anxious state of my brain at the time when I watched it. And I thought it was nice to watch a very low stakes, like, you know, there's sort of like all the little bitty conflicts, I guess, that are the only conflict in this movie pretty much at all. early on when Ian wants to date Tula, she's going to turn him down because she's like, I just don't think this will work, because she thinks the weight of all those little things, you know, is going to be insurmountable. But they do. And then just one weird little interaction at a time, that's sort of how the relationships are built. And he ends up in the family and living next door, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like it doesn't take very much to make it feel like a movie, though, you know, like you could have her have the same reluctance to have him meet her family, because she's like, no, like, you know, they're too much for you. I want you to like me. Just focus on us. And have him in his way, very true to his character, be like, no, I want to be part of your life. Like, I want you. And that means everything that comes with you. And then she introduces him to the family. He faces some strong pushback from the dad that makes him skittish. That in turn confirms her worst fears about introducing him. There's a sequence of the movie where they both are being set up with Greek people and waspy people respectively and missing the other person, you know, and then they get back together. Like, I don't know. Like, it's not hard to punch it up a little bit. It kind of makes sense to me that it came from a one-person show, because it's like, it would be a fun story to listen to someone tell you over dinner, but it's not necessarily something I want to be trapped in a theater watching. And in fact, in my memory, I retroactively thought that there was that conflict in this movie, because I watching it now, I was like, wait, literally, like, how would anyone approve a movie where there's no problem? Like, anyway.
I found it refreshing, which is feels like a funny thing to say about a 2002 romantic comedy. But yeah, I'm tired of, I'm just so tired, guys. Basically, in general, and like overwrought fictional conflict, especially with like a level of emotion that feels unearned. I've also had a lot of Justin got us a subscription to Disney Plus this month to watch Moon Knight, and I've just had it with melodrama and people not being able to think about things and make a decision about anything until they face their worst ultimate fear and you know, had a reckoning. This was just a nice, peaceful little movie.
And
surprised me too, that I was really delighted that I was a little bit worried. I remember that I had watched it back in 2002 and you know, there's not a lot of huge substance there, as Samantha has pointed out. So I didn't really remember much about the movie, but I was very pleasantly surprised at how well the humor holds up today. There's not any punching down in this movie really either. There's not like a gross, like, you know, unless my brain just skated over it. I don't really remember any anti-queer jokes. I don't remember any like nasty fat jokes or anything coming out of this movie. And that was also felt like a relief.
And that's hard to come by, even in movies that are made like last year. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And in 2002, like, holy shit. Like, I don't even remember what other rom-coms were in theaters then, but I know it was bad.
I mean, like, to me, it kind of feels like, what if the Family Stone were just about like people having dinner with like no issue? Like, it feels cut from the same cloth as a lot of those like 90s, like indie, family focused indies.
Okay. So you know what I just discovered on the Wikipedia page for this movie that is a fucking power move on Nia Vardalos's part? Okay. So the guy who is hardly in this movie, who is Ian's best friend, who's going to like be his best man for the wedding or whatever, that was Nia Vardalos's real life husband at the time of filming. This was her story about meeting and falling in love with and marrying her actual husband that she turned into a one-woman play, and then it got turned into a movie, and then she cast that very own husband to stand there and watch her make out with John Corbett. Wow. So there's the drama. There's the narrative conflict that Samantha was craving all this time.
This was Aiden, right? This was post him being Aiden Shaw?
I think so. I was wondering, let me look up at the, because this is 2002. Sex and the City came out in the 90s, yeah. Right? So, yeah.
Anyway, what were you saying, Sadie?
Well, like the two things that I love about this movie, well, we'll get into John Corbin in a second. Number one, I just feel like this is a really kind of subtly very like thoughtful look at like how to carve out your own identity and existence while also like loving the culture that you come from. And so there's like that nuance there of like, I want to do these things and be these things, but also I love I love my aunts and my mom and my grandma, and I love like all of the things that they've taught me, and like I love their culture. So it's like, it's interesting how like, you know, at the end her daughter is like, well, I want to go to the brownie thing, and she's like, no, you're going to Greek school, but also you can marry whoever you want, right? So there's like, she still wants her daughter to be proud of who she is and her culture, but also not have the limitations that Tula felt when she was growing up and falling in love with Ian and all of that. So that's first of all. Second of all, well, actually, I'm going to add another way. So second, two of three is, I love the way that Nia Vardalos looks. Like, I love her curly hair. I love how she's not like a size zero. I just don't feel like we really get women who look like her on screen now. And we also really didn't at the time either. Like, she's just like interesting to look at. Like, she's a unique looking person. And then thirdly, Ian, perfect boyfriend, perfect partner, perfect lead. Like, he is so swoon-worthy to me. Like, they have just so many genuine moments of like, oh my God, like they have so much chemistry. And he genuinely cares about her and wants to learn about her culture. Like, he's just perfect. He's not weird or like predatory or like coercive or anything. Like, there's no weird, like, you know, calling her 20 times a day until she says yes. Like, they're both just really in it. And he's just like, my whole life is you now. And I'm like, oh my God, it's so good. Anyway, just had to get that off my chest. He's great and so hot in this movie.
Yeah, that really is some grown man shit that is, you know, almost mm-hmm. to the point of being fantastical in real life, to have a guy just be like, hey, I'm in it. You're what I want. This is what I want to do. Like, not, I don't know. I feel like a lot of, that's why he's kind of a dream man, you know, in this movie, because maybe even more so now that it's kind of like about keeping your options open, I guess. And narratives tend to be like, I don't know, the person who ends up becoming the one, that it's some sort of victory or something instead of like a choice, if that makes sense.
And I honestly love the little subplot of the brother who like really is into art, you know, because he wants to like redesign the menus, but his dad doesn't really like care or like think that that's like valuable. But then later he goes to Tula and he's like, hey, I'm signing up for some classes. You inspire me to do that. I'm like, oh my God.
Telling that a very minor character has more of an arc than either of our protagonists.
I would argue that they does have an arc. And
how is she changed by the end of the movie beyond the opening
Samantha,
makeup
did you
montage?
See her hairstyle.
She's comfortable in herself.
Oh, you knew exactly
now.
I was going to go.
Like the message is she like gets LASIK or was LASIK invented by then. She like changes her hair and starts doing her makeup, and then she gets a dream man who finds her. Like, I don't know. Like, I want her to have grown in some way, or him to have grown in some way. How? Tell me how. Literally not trying to be like a jerk here. I just need you to lay out for me how her character progresses.
If you would let me speak, Samantha,
never.
I will tell you. Okay, so at the beginning, she is so not confident in herself because she does not know where she fits in, both with her family and in society and in her own life, right? Like, she is not happy doing what she's doing as a waitress. She knows what she likes to do. She likes computers and she likes, you know, this feeling of independence, right? And so she first of all makes this very brave move in telling her dad, I'm going to college. She goes to college and then she starts to find her own style. Like, she's dressed very unassuming at the beginning. And what I love specifically about the makeover is that this is probably the only like makeover montage-esque thing I've ever seen where it's not because of the male gaze, if that makes sense. So if we think about like she's all that, right? There's that makeover, but it's exclusively for his benefit, really. Like, ew, these glasses are ugly. I don't think they're hot on you, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas Tula is just exploring what she wants to be. And so you can see like she becomes more vibrant as she embraces what she looks like. And she doesn't change much. Like, she still dresses similarly. It's just in brighter colors. She doesn't straighten her hair or anything like that, but she kind of, you know, she puts some gel up in it. She makes it curlier and like more textured, and it looks really good. She starts to wear makeup, which she enjoys doing. So there's that aspect. Then she branches out, but still connects with her family. And so by the end, she is very confident in her love of Ian. She's very confident in herself. And also by finding herself, she can now fully embrace her Greek heritage. Because I don't think before this, she would have ever like wanted her daughter to go to Greek school. She would have fully just divested from her culture and just been like, I don't want anything to do with this. But instead, she's managed to find this harmony between I can still connect to my roots and be with my family, but also I'm very much going to be my own person. And so it's that finding that nuance of individuality within your culture that I think is very fascinating. And so I think that she grows quite a lot throughout the movie.
I agree. I think that she's like a little hollow, depressed shadow wraith at the beginning who's just sort of existing in these roles that have been defined for her, but she doesn't feel like she has made or even has any choice in the matter. And then she, it's subtle, it really is the word for it, Sadie, but I think that it's very clear that you see she comes to be fully present in her own life. And even though she may, yes, yeah. And definitely the style there, I love the makeover scene is incredible. Also, it's, you know, it's a makeover scene where it's showing her choosing the clothes, like Sadie said, you know, and kind of trying it on and seeing what, it's not like a imposed from the outside by like some fairy godmother or god gay, you know, type of figure, putting a new style on her that she didn't have the wherewithal to choose for herself. So yeah, I don't, it just shows her going from that period of adulthood where you feel sort of aimless and you're a grown up now and you're doing something on your day to day, but you don't really feel like you necessarily are exercising your own agency in it, to a person who actually lives her life. And I think that it's nice that, of course, the romance is the catalyst for having all these interactions with her own family that get her there. But
it's not the focus,
really appealing thing,
say,
is like less the romance and more, watching her come into her own and carve her own place comfortably for herself within her family and community.
Does she defend the wedding to her dad directly, or is it the mom doing it behind the scenes like happened with the college stuff?
I believe it's just the mom doing it.
Mm-hmm. See, like if you have her do it directly, like that shows to me some growth. Like you have at first, it's like she wants to go to college and her mom has to like, you know, wear the dad down behind the scenes, but like then she gets more confident in herself and she says, look, I'm marrying him whether you like it or not. Like, it's cliche, but at least there's a reason like those scenes happen in movies like this. I don't know.
Instead, they gave us a different scene. Instead of conflict again, we had the resolution with the mom and the grandmother, and they're looking at her in the wedding crown in the mirror. Like, yeah, it was less of a confronting
so nice.
And yeah, more of a, I mean, I see Samantha's point, but also this was good for me to watch this week. It was nice to watch to watch the generations coming together across their gaps of misunderstandings to, you know.
Yeah, and to be clear, I don't have a bad time watching it. Like, it's fun. Most of the people in this are charming and good looking. Like, it's just like, it's cute. And there's lots of cute little moments in it. I just, I feel like, Sadie, you were successfully able to piece together kind of a minor, very subtle arc for her. But I dare you to do it for Aiden. Like, how does Aiden change?
Oh, he's a prop. I mean,
yeah, Aiden is fully just like, what if we just created the perfect man? Like, the perfect. Yeah, yeah. What if we created the perfect man and then just maintained that the entire time? And that's fine. I will say, I love the scene where she's asking him what do you see in me? And he says, I came alive when I met you. Like, I love that. I think that that's so sweet and so romantic. And you can kind of see, right? Like, he sees what Tula can't really see about her family just because she's, like, been in it so long. But, like, his family is so...
Oh, gosh.
Is so repressed. Like, they're just milquetoast. I feel like I use the word milquetoast almost every single episode, and I won't stop now. Because they're just very, like, bland. Like, they don't talk to each other. There's no, like, vibrancy, right? And so, like, him, he is much more willing to adapt to her family and her way of life because that's just something that he's kind of, you can see that he's wanted. So it's both marrying her and also marrying her family. And he wants to marry both.
Yeah, I have to say, and maybe this is a self-indictment, I felt right at home in those scenes of just quietly sitting across from each other in chairs and drinking a glass of wine. I'm sorry. I'm just like, this is my vibe. Yes, I recognize my, I guess, I don't know if Mormons are considered Protestant or not, but my waspiness here, but I find this deeply soothing.
Oh my God. That was probably one of the most uncomfortable scenes I have watched in months. And I've seen some pretty fucked up shit recently. I was just like, my skin is crawling. Get me out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. Strong Get Out vibes from the parents here on Aiden's side.
Samantha, let me ask you, sure. Are you a fan of Frasier?
I've only watched like a handful of episodes, but it does
that
seem like kind of my vibe.
Core.
Yeah.
I feel like it is.
Yeah.
That was just a question I had.
My brother has been watching it and likes it, and that's usually a good indication that it would be my taste as well. But
I don't like it. Which is, yeah. Elliot and I have just been putting it on in the background every once in a while. And I will say, though, in the end scene or the end credits when they're singing the song and it gets to the part where he just is scatting tossed salad and scrambled eggs. That's the only time I laugh, like throughout the entire episode, but I laugh every time.
I do. It's funny you bring that up because one of my aversions to watching Frasier is I don't like that the words scrambled eggs are in the theme song. Like, when I had tried to watch it in the past, I got to that and I was like, I don't know that I need to keep going with this.
Samantha, we have two sides of the same coin because I was like, I don't know about this. And then the theme song said that and I was like, maybe I am on board. Maybe I can watch it.
It's like, that's
up.
A bold choice of food to like evoke at the start of, yeah, a piece of media.
And also, I just want to know what kind of, because I've never had a salad with like scrambled eggs. Like, I've had a Cobb salad with boiled eggs in it.
I
but
feel
there's something
like
about scrambled
it's
eggs.
Not one dish. I feel like it's you're having a tossed salad and separately scrambled eggs, like some kind of like brunch
but, like, who does that?
Situation. I don't, or yeah, because a Cobb right, salad, sure, right,
presumably.
Has, I don't know. If those aren't scrambled, we need to solve this mystery.
I need to get to the bottom of it. I think I even looked it up once, and the guy who wrote the song was just like, I don't know.
That's the muses were speaking through him.
Do we have other guys in My Big Fat Greek Wedding? We have like a series of suitors who are all like, none of them have speaking lines, yeah. Right? I think my favorite was the chest hair dude with the open shirt and all the rings.
He's got at least a strong personal style going on.
I won't say necessarily that I think that there's anyone I could arguably, you know, vouch for Tula, but I do think that her sister Athena is a repressed lesbian. That's my stance, and I won't be swayed.
Oh, and the brother will come out like 15 years later. The brother will be a mid to late life coming out.
He's just now starting on his art classes journey. It's going to be a little while, but he'll get there.
Yeah, yeah. I think that Athena will leave her husband eventually because I don't like him very much. And then she'll come out and the dad will be okay with it. And then I feel like there's going to be a plot where Tula's like, what do you mean you're okay with it? She's like, well, I'm okay with it, but I thought that you like almost had a heart attack when I told you that I was just marrying a guy who wasn't Greek. And then the dad's going to be like, well, Athena had Greek babies first, so she can now do whatever she wants. Maybe I should write My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3. Is that still in development?
I heard the second one flopped, right? So,
well, the second one did.
Yeah. Probably not.
I did see it.
I was kind of distressed even here that they did a sequel to it, because this is a cute little, it's a nice little, you know, fairy tale with real life detailed story, you know, when they wrap off and they're all living on the same little street on their houses and everything. Like, I just don't see how you could
pick this little
sugar house back up without like breaking it, you know, like. Have you guys seen the sequel?
I have.
Sadie has.
Does the sequel have a narrative conflict?
It has too much conflict, and it's happening all at once.
They saved it all up.
Like, yeah, there's so much happening. Like, I didn't really like it. I loved the concept of it because so the wedding in the second movie is actually because they find out that the mom and the dad have actually they've never been married. Like, their marriage was like not officiated properly.
Okay, that is a good setup for this. Yes. I can see that leading to good things.
So like, that's the whole thing is like, it's actually the mom and dad having to get married and also having this like, oh my God, we've been living in sin for like 30 years kind of thing. And so it's a very fun premise, but it's a little sobering. Like, there's just kind of like weird aspects to it. And I saw this in 2016 when it came out, have not seen it since. But from what I remember,
2016, that was the jump, was from 2002 to 2016. That's what got Bridget Jones too, when it took that huge break and then had the last sequel. Oh,
because like Tula,
sorry to interrupt.
Tula and Ian are dealing with like a recession, and so like a lot of the family businesses have closed, and like their daughter is like rebelling, and there's like all this stuff happening, and like Tula feels like the spark isn't in their marriage anymore. There's like another weird subplot that's happening. It's a lot. I don't know if I really liked it, but I very rarely enjoy when movies pick up like a decade plus past when the last one came out. I just don't agree with it because I feel like it just kind of like ruins the vibe at that point. Because if you leave a movie for like a decade plus, then it's already just kind of settled. Like, it is there. It is good, you know?
Yeah, and there's they're filming on digital instead of film, and everything looks a little different because they don't have the original sets and locations. And
oh, yeah. Well, it feels creepy when a sequel with a large gap like that will try to capture sort of the same vibes as the original because, yeah, like, life has changed so much. So much time has passed, and so things wouldn't be the same. So it feels just like an odd pantomime of something eerie again.
I would like if they had to compensate by making the conflict like so extreme, Sadie, like like a evil alien invades Earth and is like, the only thing that will stop me from destroying your planet is another big fat Greek wedding. And they have to like put a wedding together to like save the whole planet from destruction. Now there is some stakes.
And it's going to be the brother's gay wedding because 15 years or whatever later, he's finally come out.
Yeah. And then it's a battle of, are the parents so homophobic that they're willing to let Earth be destroyed?
Risk the fate of the Earth. Oh,
there
my God.
We go.
Yes.
Let's do a line of cocaine and take this to Hollywood right now. We've cracked My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3, everybody.
Sadie, are you in?
Sadie.
Wait. I have something very funny to say. Would you believe that Joey Fatone's character in the sequel does come out as gay?
Wait, for real?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
Joey Fatone.
Holy shit. I bet that wasn't originally envisioned. Did her brother in real life come out as gay or something?
No, her brother didn't come out. It says, cousin Angelo runs a couple of small businesses with his quote-unquote partner, Patrick, who his family soon learns is much more than just a business partner.
Oh, interesting. And, he's also a public notary, is what I'm choosing to take that to me. No, but wait, you've seen it, right?
Yeah, but I saw it in 2016. My knowledge is very limited.
So were you just, okay. I was wondering if you were withholding the gay information from us.
No, I'm currently
Sadie
on the
would
wiki.
Never.
Jogging,
and I
jogging
was
your memory.
It
yeah.
Because I'll be honest, I had like an idea where I was like, there's no way that at least one of them doesn't come out as gay. I feel like that had to happen. As like a plot point.
I feel like it should be the brother, though. They kind of contained it in a little side plot with Joey Fatone, but
apparently,
we need the brother's Big Fat Greek Wedding.
My Big Fat Greek Gay Wedding.
Yes.
The brother does sit Angelo down and has a heartfelt conversation. This is from the wiki. Has a heartfelt conversation with Angelo about telling the family that he's gay. God. And also the daughter's name is Paris, which I hate.
What? Tula's daughters? Tula and Ian named their daughter Paris?
Yeah.
Why?
Is it a Romeo and Juliet reference?
Is it like how the Beckhams like named their first children after the cities in which they were conceived?
Yeah. Did they honeymoon in Paris? But no, they said she was pregnant 1 minute later at the end of the movie. So
yeah.
I'm assuming she was conceived
on
her wedding
night. Supernatural sci-fi.
Yeah.
Influence there.
Damn.
She was just suddenly pregnant.
John Corbett.
They got married.
John Corbett just got married like 2 years ago.
Damn. And that's it. Wait, I guess 2018 is longer than 2 years ago now. That's four years ago.
Oh, he actually started dating her the same year that My Big Fat Greek Wedding came out, though. So they've been living in sin for like two decades.
Wow. So where's our big fat wedding movie about John Corbett's real life wedding?
Yeah.
It would probably have just as much narrative conflict as My Big Fat Greek Wedding one. Hollywood star marrying other Hollywood star. I don't know who he's married to, though.
So apparently Tula and the best friend, Ian's best friend in the movie, Mike, were married in real life. And the original story of the original movie is based on her relationship with him. However, they divorced in 2018, 2 years following the release of the movie that showed the characters losing their spark. That makes me depressed. I wonder if it remained like a bone of contention. And that when you made the movie of our lives, you recast me as John Corbett.
I think for our for a future rom-com episode, we need to do Nia Vardalos's other movie. Well, one of her other movies, My Life in Ruins. Have you ever seen that movie?
It's
where she's like a travel guide in Greece.
Oh, My Life in Ruins. I get it. Very falling in love.
Did you see that there's another? It's
it's another
the
Adam lot of Demos movie about a winery, right?
Yes.
And it's also the same. New Zealand.
It's the same. We should actually cover that one at some point very soon.
I was thinking about that because I heard both actors interviewed, and it was Adam Demos again, but not Christina. Or wait, what? It wasn't Christina. Who was in Falling in Love? Who was the actress in that?
That was we watched two that were so similar. Christina Milian was in one of them.
Yeah,
she was the one in Falling in Love, right?
It's Christina Milian. Yeah, she was in the first one, and then Victoria Justice is in the second. Well, it's not the second. It's a different movie. But
it's a spiritual successor.
I think Christina Milian herself had another similar Netflix movie out where she like goes to on a vacation and runs into her ex. And Christina Milian apparently has a thriving career with these type of falling in love movies now.
I feel like we've been doing
Resort to Love came after Falling in Love.
I was thinking of Christine Milioti. So yes,
from Palm Springs.
Yeah,
the one with the huge eyeballs.
Yeah. It's funny when I try to think back of movies we did. Even beyond three movies ago, all I feel are flashes. Like I try to think about Falling in Love, and I just think like Peloton, Goat, Door Hinge, like. Just little flashes, little sense memories coming back to me. Anyway, should we rate My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
We should.
I will give it, I'll give it 2 outdated computers out of 5. I really do need something to happen to watch a movie and like it on more than just an atmospheric level. And yeah.
I give this movie 5 out of 5 Joey Fatones, an entire NSYNC composed of Joey Fatones. Yeah, I think it holds up. I was delightfully surprised. I did not expect to. I think I liked it more this time than I did when I originally saw it and as a teenager and probably thought that it was like boring and about old people bullshit at that time. But now I am an old person with old people bullshit of my own. And it was a nice little comforting, you know, however many minutes it was to watch. Damn, it was even shorter than 90 minutes, wasn't it?
It was 1 hour and 35 minutes.
Okay. A little, I'll give them the extra 5 minutes. That was probably just credits over. Anyway.
I will give My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Oh God, I'm going to do 2. 5 Windex bottles plus 5 Greek weddings for a total score of 10 out of 5.
Well, a whole Greek wedding as a single unit of measurement is kind of blowing my mind as a concept, Sadie.
I think that if you want the very specific, like late 90s, early 2000s, crisp film movie of Moonstruck, but you want it to be a little less like big, like intense Nick Cage yelling Brad
a little
on the
less
screen.
Nick Cage with his wooden hand.
Or you want something like Crazy Rich Asians, but a little bit more scaled down, then My Big Fat Greek Wedding is perfect. It's so nice to just throw on. It's very soothing. I watched it the other night just folding my clothes and I was like, this is so peaceful. I'm greatly enjoying it. I think the comedy is really funny. I laugh out loud at multiple points. It's just a really lovely treat to wind down at the end of the day. I can't not smile when I watch this movie. And that's the goal of a rom-com at the end of the day. So, Samantha, take it away. Tell Jen to start outroing us.
Jen, what kind of baklava should people send to our podcast?
I'm stumped with that one. I don't know how I'm going to take this into. You should send the baklava to our email account.
Yes, email us baklava.
We will. Okay, we're on Twitter at YSSTOG. That is typically the easiest and quickest place to get a hold of us. We do have an email account that is open to receive gifts of baklava. We don't check it very often, so hopefully the baklava won't get stale.
Moldy?
Waiting if, yeah. Anyway, but you can send us emails. We get very excited when we do check it and realize that we've gotten one at ysstogpodcast@gmail.com. And most importantly, if you would like to help us pay to rent and stream all these movies that we so enjoy discussing for your listening pleasure, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/ysstog. That gets you access to our Discord server where we like to chat further about the things we talk about on the podcast. And then we have like some tiered rewards where Sadie makes you playlists and you can even select a movie for us to discuss on the podcast.
Ahem, ahem. I would like to thank our lovely, wonderful Patreons, Logan Mayonnaise, Andrew Althea, Xenolon, Sharon, Justin, Evan, Liz, Brittany, Ace, Mara, Rainy the Void, Heartleaf, Ave with Teeth, Hadas, Ryan, Maddie, Abby, and Caroline. We love you all so much and we would absolutely invite you to our big fat podcasting wedding.
A podcasting wedding. That sounds like fodder for a movie.
Coming to a theater near you.